Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
Let's have a look at the business stories that are making this morning's newspapers. Delighted to be joined by businesswoman and broadcaster Nora Casey. Also joining us is Robert Whelan of Rockwell Finance. Good morning, one and all.
Morning. Morning,
Bobby.
Now, Robert, I thought of you because I know you're a Carlow man.
I am.
And when I looked at the front page of the Irish Times today, I saw that Carlow had rejected poor Garrett Sheridan.
I know.
What's going on?
It's a very high bar to be accepted and endorsed by the good people of Carlow, Bobby, as you know yourself. So it's very interesting. In fairness to Garrett Sheridan, he's he's coming to it as a businessman, and he felt the grow of the people of Ireland calling out to him that we needed this representative to come over. So yeah, I think it just goes to show you the high bar that candidates have to clear in to get a nomination, and which I think is right, to be very honest with you. I think there should be a level of scrutiny that's carried out by, I would say, professionals before they're put to the electorate.
Yeah, Nora, just Aura's hopeful scrambling for nomination. Robert told us there about Garrett Sheridan having that setback, but he does have three more opportunities, I think, with three other councils, Meath, Offaly and Louth, which are meeting on Monday. So
yeah,
his race is not over yet.
Well, thankfully for all of us, the race will be over on September 24th because this is the most boring part about the presidential election. And I loved Pat Leahy's piece, which appears also this morning, where he talks about a bristling Catherine Connolly and Mary Lou is dropping, you know, all kinds of hints about the person that they might nominate today with Sinn Féin that has a lot of Irish, which everyone said, well, that's Piers Doherty. And then meanwhile, somebody else from the Ard Cathaoirleach is saying, well, we all love Catherine Connolly, so will it be a left unity vote against Catherine Connolly, effectively making it a very short candidate selection? And Bobby, you and I both know the fun is in the big, big candidate selections.
Yeah, yeah. Makes it a much more interesting
and the
campaign.
Dancer and the singer. And then Jim Gavin got into trouble because, of all things, he wore white trousers when he was driving.
And he never closed the gate. That's a mortal sin in farming terms,
you
leaving a gate open.
We're really, you know, on the skirting on the sidelines of what these poor presidential hopefuls might be facing over the next few weeks. But Heather Humphrey's husband, of course, being in the Orange Order 50 years ago, and she just threw her eyes up to heaven as though, what the hell are you talking about? But he himself got brownie points because he said he wouldn't give up the farm to move into the Oris. And I love the fact, Bobby, that you went to Manart with News Talk, because when I was working on News Talk, we went to the Ploughing Championship.
Well, I was
trailer.
At both. You have to do two jobs now where you used to only have to do one.
I was new to
I had to do both.
With Chris Donoghue and in a trailer with the rain lashing and nobody knowing my name, saying, is that Laura? As Chris said, there, they all know you, Laura. Yes, she's my co-host.
Well, what we hear from Pat Leahy as well is that, but they point at one important lesson for candidates, it's often more important how they deal with the story rather than the content of the story. That's really the point here.
Well, the point that is, if everybody's taken Michael D's stance, say nothing and you'll be fine.
Yeah, well, I think that only works for so long. Let's move to matters of a budgetary nature, because the front page of the Irish Examiner, Robert, tells us that ministers are going to have to sing for their supper. What an interesting headline. Warning over runaway spending ahead of the budget.
Yeah, well, and I suppose, like, listen, there's lots of viewpoints on this, but certainly as someone in business, I think some sort of fiscal responsibility is good to see. Like, we have a problem where we're spending 5 billion euro more this year than we did last year.
And it's a lot of money.
It's a huge amount of money.
Yeah.
And you're seeing overruns just being seen as accepted. So you're given a budget, like anyone in business, you give a department a budget. If they come back to you, surely they have to justify. And all Minister Jack Chambers seems to be suggesting here, or aides close to him, are that they have to actually present what he's called a business case, which makes sense. And the Department of Health, which has seen an increase in their budget up close to 50% in 4 years, is already over by a billion this year. So at some stage, I'm just saying there has to be some level of fiscal responsibility put on the public sector to be able to just go, hang on a second here, this isn't an ATM machine we can keep going to.
Oh, you're very mean.
Nora, what were your thoughts on this?
The only reason we're talking about this is because there's no election this year. So, and there's a lot of, you know, when you, I'm always talking about, I'm in, you know, the UK all the time, and boy, are they going through some tough times. Like, I mean, in Ireland, we're not going through that level of toughness, but we like to be fiscally very sound, you know, like we like tightening our belts. So I like the fact that Jack Chambers, the public expenditure minister, sorry, is saying that, you know, they'll have to sing soon for their supper, but also he's putting his foot down on supplementary estimates. The kind of activity, Bobby, if you're a CEO, you'd be a tent in your garden if you come in every year to your board and said, well, a month after.
The main problem with those is that they're not targeted.
No.
No.
And you know, they're hugely expensive.
Yeah. Hugely expensive.
So I do agree with that. I think that shouldn't, that has turned into something which is commonplace, whereas it used to be rare. But I think the reality, if you step back from all this talk about the budget and whether or not they're going to do anything around cost of living increases, energy, I suppose fuel allowance, there are areas of the economy that desperately do need help.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's the truth. I mean, housing, we're talking all the time about issues which Ireland's not doing good at. We haven't ticked the box in. So instead of us always talking about the same thing, I think it would be good if somebody was brave enough in a budget to say, let's tackle the big stuff now, you know?
Yeah, but I do think the targeted thing is the key. Massive increases in child benefit make no sense when you have child poverty.
But as we're getting older, I, of course, agree with the state pension thing.
Yeah, no, I've no problem with that. And I agree with it because of someone who's in the pensions industry. Like, we have auto-enrollment coming in January.
I fed you that line.
We have thanks, Nora. We have a poverty crisis. But I'm just coming back to, we do have real problems in this country. I think no one has any problem with money being targeted in the right direction. I think just this whole universal approach, just to me anyway, just seems to be not the most...
I think part of the problem is that there's been sort of a whole lot of wolf cries around the corporate taxation piece, and it hasn't really come home to bite. And I think when that does turn, which it's going to, there'll be a very different budgeting landscape because... You know, we're at a stage now where people are saying, oh yeah, we're going to lose that income, and it hasn't gone away yet. But once it goes, the environment, the fiscal environment, I also don't think it's great that, you know, if the ERSI and the central bank are saying, this is crazy, guys, you can't keep spending like that, that they're just ignored.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fairness, here you have Austin Hughes, who's working with the Credit Union Consumer Sentiment Index, and he's called them the fiscal faithful. Now, I understand there's a balance to be made, but ultimately, I think we have experts in the room, and all they're basically saying is, whatever about capital expenditure or one-offs, what we're building in are these set costs into the economy, which if we do suffer that shock, are going to cause an enormous problem because people are used to them. What I will welcome that they are floating in the budget are increases in the tax credits and cut-off point because they have real impact for people who are actively working. But so I'm just saying, I've no problem with us spending money in the right way, but long-term baked-in costs into the economy... Are ultimately what's at risk should we suffer that type of shock you're talking about.
Yeah.
And Nora, I don't know what your thoughts are on the minimum wage. Again, it's received a lot of comment this morning. Backlash from business over proposal to hike the minimum wage. And again, this is the Commission on Low Pay have recommended 65 cent or a 5% increase. But there's a lot of views that this, we're the second now highest minimum wage in Europe. I think if you go to a retail shop or you go to a restaurant in another European country, you can see that one of the reasons that the menu prices are so high in Ireland is related to this.
It's related to that and other things.
Yeah, but it's one of the significant, most restaurants are operating up around 30% of their costs, up to 40%.
I always think there's a lot of talk about this when I'm not entirely sure it is the problem, Bobby, because they did a survey to show what the average minimum wage or the average wage of workers in the hospitality sector, which is one of the sectors very affected, was 17 euro something. So the Commission on Low Pay has said they want a 65 cent increase from 13.50 to 14.15. The government may not go that high. It may go just to 13.50. I think where they have a point is in 2019, our minimum wage was much lower than that. It was 9.80, 9.80. I don't agree with that either. And you can't decouple it from the VAT issues, because if this 1 billion VAT cut is going to happen within the hospitality sector from 13 to 9%, then it does make sense that people should benefit. At the end of the day, what do I really feel in my heart? I feel that the market dictates what you have to pay in order to have staff, and that it doesn't really matter what the government does. You know, in my sector, in your sector, if you didn't have staff, and all I hear all the time is SMEs saying, we can't get staff, we can't get skilled staff, the turnover, the churn is huge. Young people nowadays don't see things like jobs for life, traveling around the world. They're complicated.
Like, I come from a place that, you'd like to pay everybody as much as, particularly for these kind of jobs, as much as you could possibly pay them. But there is an impact. If you look at now the way restaurants open, you look at the way retail opens, you know, the services get cut on the basis that they can't afford 40 hours. So they decide, well, we won't open on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday now.
Yeah.
And we'll just operate 4 days a week.
And it's not one size fits all. We all know in the hospitality industry in particular, there are big players making big bucks.
Yeah.
And they are actually doing price gouging, you know, especially like the NFL is in town at the moment. You try and get a hotel room in Dublin for less than 500 or 600 a night. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous, you know.
Robert, your thoughts on this? Many retail staff will not have jobs if the minimum wage is increased. That's from the Irish Examiner. And again, this is coming from the some of the business organisations, the Small Firms Association.
And Retail Excellence Ireland, yeah.
And like, Retail Excellence Ireland.
Yeah, like Sean McCabe is quoted in this piece in the Examiner.
But Gene McCabe, I think.
Gene McCabe,
name.
Sorry. Yeah, thank you. By my writing there. In his, Ronan Smith in the Examiner, where there's a 112% increase in store closures in the second half of this year versus last year. So what that goes to show you is that whatever pressures are there at the moment are causing an enormous impact today.
Yeah.
I suppose this is why they're saying, if this is the trend, putting increased costs. But to be fair, and Nora's point and our point, we're all of the same agreement. Everyone wants all their staff to be adequately compensated so that they can have a decent life. But so it's trying to find that happy medium. My own view on it is, I think ultimately what the government should be looking to do, if they are looking at, it's all about cost of living increases. It's across all the papers. It's the cost of living, the cost of living, the cost of living. And I think ultimately what they need to be looking at are targeted, and this is back to my point earlier, about targeted measures. So for instance, employers' PSI is an enormous cost that nobody talks about.
Yeah.
But it's an enormous cost on business. And they increase the rate of employers' PSI.
Yeah.
So I'm saying there are ways of trying to, you know what I'm trying to say, balance things out.
And the point I was trying to make was that if you increase somebody's minimum wage and they end up getting less hours, they're not benefiting.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So everybody's losing.
Correct.
I totally agree on PRSI. I've never understood why, you know, there isn't a huge uproar from the SME sector, from all those organisations saying that is the most, you know, I suppose, unequal, hard to understand. I mean, I read it and I don't understand it. So it's one of those that could easily be targeted. Mm-hmm. And that would be much better. Like VAT only helps certain sectors.
Incentivize employment. It always works.
Yeah.
Yeah. Robert, I want you to move to the central bank loudly stating, defending their mortgage limits. They're in a couple of papers today. Again, it's probably a PR message that's been carefully scripted. But they're saying that mortgage rules have kept house prices in check. They're also saying they're defending their mortgage limits. But I think maybe we might have some views around that.
Absolutely. I suppose first and foremost, Rockwell are regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland, so I'm going to say nothing back now, am I joking? So we had the Deputy Governor, Vasilios Mavroulis.
Good pronunciation. Well done.
Was out this week. And this is all going back to the measures that they took in 2015, where they effectively changed and set in stone the rules around mortgage lending. And I remember at the time, I wrote a piece for an industry publication where I said, this is going to have a really detrimental effect on housing, because the biggest change they made wasn't the income multiplier. That wasn't the problem. What they did was they said to second-time buyers that you needed to have 20% of a deposit to buy a property, but first-time buyers only needed 10.
Yeah.
And what you had was in 2015, 2016, 2017, were second-time were people who bought houses in 2005, 6, 7, single or just coupled. They'd now had families. They were in two-bed apartments. So you had mum, dad, three kids in a two-bed apartment. They were trying to get out. They were dealing with negative equity. And just when they raised enough to just get the deposit for the house they could, that they needed to buy.
So they weren't able to trade out of it.
They weren't able to trade out of it. So it created this enormous bottleneck, which again meant that first-time buyers didn't have those homes. It is a property ladder for a reason. So you had a lot of starter properties which were caught in this limbo. And then because they didn't incentivize house building, because again, they were effectively saying, well, we need less stock. What you had was that loads of more and more tradespeople left Ireland.
And the prices have gone up by 25% in the last couple of years
so
of property.
The income limits were incredibly prudent and were the right idea, because what they effectively did was tied house prices to wages, which is no problem with that. But they think the issues around deposits was just, again, an overreaction to the 100% mortgage, which was equally, you know, as silly a move, in my opinion.
Looking forward to you dealing with the central bank in the future.
They're very good on the regulatory side.
Speaking of property valuations, Nora, and, you know, the prices of property have gone up 25% since 2021. A number of newspaper publications telling us this morning that millions will face property tax hikes. It's gas, you know, when you say to somebody, if you're talking about property tax, how much is your property worth? You're looking for the absolute lowest valuation possible here. Like, they're talking about houses here, you know, for €230,000.
Yes, I know.
I haven't seen one in a while, but maybe they are out there.
It's as if the government got foresight of the deputy governor's speech from the central bank, because it's almost their response. You know, he's saying, oh, you know, the housing market has all calmed down, recognizing that household mortgage arrears are still there from that period. And then you turn the page and, oh, by the way, the house prices have gone up by 25% since 2021 when we last valued properties for the property tax. And I also have to say, Bobby, miserable morning for stories in the paper. We are going to improve.
We're moving to the lighter,
you know,
stuff
as if,
now.
As if you're not seeing the, you know, the bummer of a budget that's coming down the tracks. You then read that they're going to make 2 million people reevaluate their property. We'll all be dancing around what the value of the property in the worst part of the road sold for, you know, in the last 2 years.
That's it. It's all about low valuations. Robert.
Yeah, but can I just say one important thing? What's very, very irritating about this is they're trying to catch people out who have rooms for young adults in their back garden, home offices because they're not longer working in the office, the granny flat. I mean, how mean can you get?
And I think, again, the value of those add-ons is an arbitrary one in the sense that...
Yeah, you've no choice.
Robert, talk to me about this community down in Kerry on the Ivora Peninsula, in a place called Drummond. They've bought their own pub. I think this is great.
This is a ray of sunshine on a very gloomy day. I love this story. I absolutely love. This is an actual, it's a phenomenon. So this is a great story. The bit of colour here, it was actually originally built by Jack O'Connor, the Kerry manager, and his brother. And it's fabulous. So it cements what a pub actually is. It is, for rural Ireland in particular, it is the centre of what is can only be considered the social life of that community. And what happened here was the locals seen, we lost our post office and we lost our shop and we've had enough. And they all came together and they had a GoFundMe, and they raised over €100,000 from a GoFundMe. And, you know, one of the locals was saying here that a lot of the money came from other rural communities.
792 people contributed.
Yes.
And they got over 100 grand in the GoFundMe. But I think the point as well is, and it's well made, is that, you know, use it or lose it. So these people are, not only are they putting their money where their mouth is, but they're also, you know, patrons of this pub. They're using it. It's a living, breathing part of the community.
Absolutely. And it is also, I saw a piece with Rupert Everett recently. He was on some UK TV programme. And they'd done the same in his local village. And there was a picture of him pouring pints, because everyone in the locality has to kick in and do a shift in the pub.
And what was lovely is the local church is now an Airbnb.
I saw that.
Then you can go to the pub afterwards.
By the way, you're heading down to Dingle next week. I don't think Dick Max will ever need a fundraiser.
I don't think so. Nora, the demise of the phone call leaves us all more isolated. Adrian Weckler has a great piece about that. People just don't, Gen Zs and younger millennials, they just won't ring people.
No, if I phone...
And it's an invasion of your space, of your privacy.
If I phone my son, who's 26, he'll say, what's wrong? what's your phone me for? Somebody dead. Like, it's so unorthodox for him to even pick up the phone. But more seriously, if you're in a business where you're trying to target young people, don't even bother. They will never pick up the phone. People send me invites to events now via Instagram direct messaging. I think, you know, I work in the States a lot and AI assistants are big over there. So somebody was trying to get me to give them an appointment for me to help their business in California. I finally spent the time going through my diary, figured out the time difference, found three or four slots, you know, WhatsApped them back and said, I have these three slots. And I got a six screen message from the AI assistant telling me which particular route I had to take my inquiry in order to get a response from him.
Wouldn't be going there. Robert, they're also saying that companies now mostly build websites without phone numbers on
Absolutely.
Them. Absolutely. I find this really irritating. It's that so no one really wants to talk to you.
And this is my point, is, and your point is well made, is that the under 35s or the under whatever, they don't want to call the insurance company or the bank or the electricity company, but others do. So what drives me nuts is that why can't you have a situation whereby you have all customers taken care of? So if someone doesn't want to ring you, well then that's no problem because they're never going to ring you, but put the phone number up there for people who do want to call. Yeah. It looks like we're a dying breed, so you can see it reducing on your balance sheet and your profit and loss over the next 15, 20 years.
Exactly. And my poor, like if you talk about people of a certain age and generation, my mother died last year, she was 94 and she was still banking online and using, but not all people are like that, you know, and you go into a shop now and you need an app to buy something. You have to check yourself out, you know, and the idea of not being able to phone up your own bank to have a chat is just unorthodox to them.
Robert, finally, Kildare-born Antarctic explorer Ernest Shackleton's silver tea service is up for sale at a steal of about maybe $2,000 to $4,000.
Absolutely.
A teapot, a sugar bowl and a milk jug. Beautiful piece of silver.
It is.
Are you buying?
Not for me, although Rockwell is based on Francis Street in Dublin, which is the antiques quarter of Dublin.
As is Insomnia.
Exactly.
There you go.
But again, we've got
Francis Street, great
place. Where it's all happening. But I was very interested. The auctioneer here was the pieces around matching the buyer to the that they'd have an understanding of the historical context, etc. And myself and Nora were chatting and I was kind of saying, a seller in this instance really doesn't care who buys it. They only care about the top That's price it. Paid. Well, I suppose it just goes to show you, and again, you can see it on the investing side, there is a huge increase. Like if you talk to people on the street, they will say there's been a huge appetite over the last couple of years for
buying this kind
absolutely.
Of thing.
Absolutely.
Why would we swap this beautiful?
All right, we'll leave it there. Nora Casey, Robert Whelan, have a lovely weekend. Thank you for your review of the business stories. Much appreciated.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.